This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, and thank you for joining us on our Main Street across North Dakota this time of day. Well, you know, when we are in certain parts of the state, perhaps on the eastern edge of the state that North Dakota shares with Minnesota, there's this ribbon of water called the Red River. And I suspect that people, when they get around Belmont Park, North Dakota, near, you know, across the river from Climax, they're not thinking about jumping in and taking a swim north to Grand Forks. But that's what a lot of people did about a month ago. And we're going to talk with Joel Larson now. He joins us from Grand Forks on our microphone there. Joel is with Extreme North Dakota Water Endurance Test, actually Extreme North Dakota. The Water Endurance Test was what I was just referring to because I've got lots of races. Joel, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, good morning. Thank you.
You had an interesting finish in terms of the statistical, if you will, history of this particular contest. Everybody finished, right?
That's right. That was a unique for us. We've had, you know, as many as 28 racers in a year, and this year we had 18 individuals and then a team of six, and everybody finished the swim this year, which is the first.
And so that our listeners understand clearly, this started in 2012 at 27 miles up the river, and or down the river, I should say, and it's been 36 miles since 2014. So this is not for the faint of heart.
No, this is for those unique individuals that want that extra challenge.
And the most unique individual of this year, I guess, was Sandra Frimmerman-Berquist.
That's right.
She finished that 36-mile swim in 9 hours and 40 minutes. Wow.
Yeah, she's incredible. She's actually she's raced, I want to say, 5 times, and she's been our winner for 3 years in a row. So she's a phenomenal athlete.
But of those 100% who finished, some of them took a little longer. The longest was almost 15 hours. So these are people who are really committed to, you know, testing their endurance.
Yeah, they sure are.
How did this particular contest come about?
You know, it actually started. The idea started as a paddling race for canoeing, kayaking, stand up paddle boarding, and then my friend Andy Magnus, who kind of started the race, said, "Why don't we do swimming too and see if anyone will show up?" And that's how it started. And then it turned out that the very first year, swimming was the most popular event with 12 swimmers, and then we had 11 total paddlers. So we were like, well, maybe the swimming is the most popular. And then the next year, it was twice that many swimmers and half as many paddlers. So it really turned into a swimming race. And really, there's nothing else like it right now in the country and maybe even the world. It's a pretty unique event, and we really are proud to offer it for, you know, Grand Forks, North Dakota.
Does this get some national attention? I mean, how does the word get out? Who shows up?
Absolutely. It's all national. We actually had, I think there are only probably 4 people from North Dakota that have actually competed in the event, and the rest of maybe 200 total, 160 total swimmers have been from outside of North Dakota.
Well, what did Sandra Frimmerman-Berquist get? Bragging rights, you know?
You bet. She gets all the bragging rights. You know, most of the races, Extreme North Dakota Racing puts on a number of different events, and we're not known for our prize medals or our finisher prizes or cash or any of that stuff. We really do put on high quality, very challenging ultra endurance events, this being amongst the hardest. And if you win, you're tough. No matter what, you're tough.
Well, you mentioned Extreme North Dakota, sometimes referred to as END, and the Water Endurance Test, END Wet.
Yeah.
You've got lots of different kinds of races. You've got adventure races, cycle races, what you call multi races, foot races, and of course we've been talking about the swimming races. How do these tests come about? You guys get in a sit around a table with a beer and think, how could we really get some attention with a crazy race?
Well, sure, there's some of that. You know, it started back in 2006 with an adventure race. And what that is it's a multi-discipline event of using only a compass and a map. You run, you bike, and you paddle over an unknown course. And until that morning, it's unknown to you. So you show up for a 8 a.m. race. At 7:45, you get a map. And you plot your points along the way, and you plan your route for a 12-hour or a 6-hour race. And then everyone kind of has a different strategy for it. You know, some people are slow and methodical, and they have the shortest distance between. Other people are fast and strong, and they're like, I'm just going to, you know, go as fast as I can for as long as I can. And it's just, it's really a strategy thing. So it kind of evens the playing field between the young and the old athlete. So it's really a lot of fun for guys like myself who are less fast than I used to be. And because I think maybe my strategy and experience can kind of help me out more.
Can you give us a sense of what you might be looking at to add to the Extreme North Dakota Endurance repertoire?
Well, we'd like to add people. You know, if people are interested in helping out or have ideas and want to be, you know, want to direct races, we're always looking for that. And volunteers, we always you know, invite people to come out and have fun. Volunteering and working these events is really very rewarding. It's very fun. It's also very challenging. It's not easy to put these kind of events on, you know, when you have 40 or 50 hours committed in the week before an event, plus maintaining, you know, a job for most of us and family for many of us. So there's always a need for more people, but we're, you know, we've been in talks with other folks about longer paddling, canoeing and kayaking races utilizing the Red River between Fargo and Grand Forks. We've also had ideas about 24-hour and even 48-hour runs to where we're doing more ultra endurance running type events, which is what my personal passion is. But coming up here, I guess, is, and my favorite race, I would say, is the Wilderman Triathlon up in the Pembina Gorge.
And that is, describe it for our listeners, because this is a triathlon that is epic.
You bet. So this one is an event that started back in 2013. And again, my friend Andy had competed at an off-road iron distance triathlon a few years prior. And so iron distance is – Iron Man is a nationally known trademark. It's a specific distance, 2.4 miles, 100 and – I'm probably going to say it wrong – 112 miles biking and then a 26.2 mile run. Wow. So that's the iron distance event. And – which sounds incredible.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very long distance. And water, you can't really swim off-road. So water is usually the distance, similar no matter where you are. But biking in an Ironman event is going to be on, you know, on blocked off roads, on city streets and on highways and county roads and whatnot. And then the run will be on the same, be pavement, sidewalks, trails, paved trails, and all of that for the most part. What we're offering and what the Wilderman is an off-road event. So after your swim, you're going to be on gravel roads. You're going to be on double track trail, single track trail up in the Pembina Gorge, some minimum maintenance roads. You're going to be crossing some rivers, sometimes carrying your bike. So it's a completely different event than an Ironman. And then the run itself is also, most of it is trails. There's a little bit of gravel roads. There's some creek running. There's some rock hopping. But it is absolutely an incredible event for anyone who can finish it. And what's unique about it is we had an athlete last year who was he's a phenomenal athlete. He has an Ironman, a regular Ironman, in an under 10-hour finish, and he completed our race in just under 20.
Wow. I was going to ask you, how long does it take to swim, bike, and run over 140 miles?
Yeah, it is. I think our fastest is around 19 hours, 18-ish is the fastest. And a lot of people come in around that 25 to 27-hour mark when the sun is coming up. You know, it starts at 7 a.m. on a Saturday morning, and next Saturday it starts at 7 a.m. And there's a lot of folks that come in between, you know, 6 to 9:45-ish on Sunday morning. So they've been going for over 24 hours. The sun is coming up. They kind of get their spirits renewed as they get some sunlight, and they've been on their feet all night long through any number of different types of terrain. So it's really a unique and fun event.
Joel Larson is with Extreme North Dakota Endurance Tests, and he is an experienced endurance competitor himself. So, Joel, what would you estimate is the number of calories you need to consume to do this?
Oh, it's incredible. Everybody is different, of course, based on body size and how much exertion you're putting in, but you're probably going to eat, you know, between 400 and 800 calories per hour, and to keep your body going. And I've seen some, you know, feeding bags with people carry with them, And some people are strict and they use only real food and they're carrying avocados and nuts and chocolate and bananas and raisins, things like that. Other folks are doing Clif bars and energy bars or energy gels. And everybody does it a little bit different. And I'm lucky. I have a, I call it a cast iron gut. So I could have a piece of pizza and go for a run at the same time. And my body just tolerates it. So I'm a real food kind of guy. I like to just eat good food and go out for, you know, 4 to 6 hour run. That kind of thing is just, it's fun.
I'm going to have that slice of pizza curl up under a cottonwood tree and watch you guys swim by.
Hey, that'd be great.
But you're talking about something like 15,000 calories for somebody over the course of 19, 20 hours. And then the typical male is what, 2,000 calories a day?
I think so. Yeah. No, it is. It's an incredible amount of food and it's a lot of consumption, and you'll see people that will absolutely eat that amount of calories and probably more.
You've got a website. Are you still taking application for the Wilderman Fool coming up?
Oh, you bet. If you sign up between now and Saturday, you're probably crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, absolutely. So our website is endracing.com. It's endracing.com. And all of our races are listed on there. Past results are listed on there. We have a friend and a fantastic photographer, Wes Peck, who has probably 10,000 images somewhere on that site posted to each of the different races. And there's just a ton of information, a lot of really cool stuff that's happening right here in North Dakota. And so I would encourage anyone who's interested to go dig around and then find us on, we're on Facebook, Extreme North Dakota Racing. We're on Twitter at End Racing. We're on Instagram. So there's a number of different places where you could reach out to us and learn more about the kind of fun stuff we're putting on and kind of the crazy stuff we're doing.
And these are endurance races. So as you mentioned, sometimes they go into the night and you're running over all kinds of surfaces, rocks and creeks and stuff like that. How do you keep it safe?
Well, there is certainly risk involved.
Yeah.
We do our best. So we advise people on the front end. And what's been really fun is on our website and even posted on Facebook is a number of different race reports where people talk about, you know, these are the things that you're going to experience, the challenges that you're going to face. So don't enter this race lightly. Don't underestimate how hard this is going to be. So be prepared for everything. And we believe largely in a self-rescue mentality to where we say, if you're going to get yourself into it, you're going to get yourself out of it. And, you know, that said, we have a lot of volunteers and we have other racers who are also looking out for each other. And then we do have a sweep. So we have a person kind of following at the back that's going to come. And if someone falls down and say breaks a leg in a remote part of the Pembina Gorge, we're going to come upon that person and we're going to get them out. And the full racers is another thing. The full racers do have spot trackers, so they are actually connected by GPS, so we can have their whereabouts. And that information will also be on our social media and our website. But we're able to keep track of all of the full racers, the full Wilderman distance racers on a spot tracker. So there'll be a map, and you'll see little dots following. So we know where those folks are at all times to keep them safe.
Well, I'm not going to do it, but if I went online and signed up for the Wilderman Full and I showed up, at Walhalla with my water wings, would you literally want to discourage me? Because I wouldn't seem qualified for such a rigorous event.
You know, I think that I wouldn't. I probably would describe. I haven't met you, Doug. So,
well imagine so somebody who shouldn't be doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. So we do. You know, on sign up, people know, and they sign a waiver, and the waiver says, "Listen, you're going to face a lot of challenges, both internal and external, at you know, to get to the end of this race." And then what we do also is we do set some time guidelines to where the swim you have to finish it in 2.5 hours. So if you It's not a fast time. 2.5 is very it's very reasonable. It'd be fairly easy for anyone who would sign up for this race. Is probably going to be finishing around that time frame. But if you don't, then you might get put onto a short course for the bike or a short course for the run because we have these different guidelines. And you know, at some point in time. And a number of people have done this over the years. You get out and you swim and you're like, that was too much. I'm going to do half the swim instead of the full. And on the bike, they get out there and they start going, and then they're like, wow, that elevation was way more than I was anticipating, and the terrain was harder and more difficult, and the gravel was softer than I was hoping, so I can only finish half of the bike. I'm going to cut this one short and then just go run. So there's a number of ways to shorten the amount of effort, but any effort out there is a lot of effort, so I probably would discourage someone from with water wings. I would discourage that person from jumping in the Mount Carmel Recreation Area.
All right. Well, I came across this disclaimer, you know, as you mentioned it, and this is it. I'm quoting it. This is an epic race. Please, before you decide to do this race, read the race reports from previous races. Go into this baby with your eyes open.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it.
Now, I think in the years past, I've talked with a representative from Extreme North Dakota about the UFDA Mud Run. There's not an UFDA Mud Run this year. Why not?
Well, you know, we run a skeleton crew. And we've, for a couple years now, we've really, our hardest thing is finding people that are willing to give their time. And, you know, folks that are willing to spend a week or 2 weeks to set up a race and to build obstacles and to set them up and then to take them back down and then to man the course for the entire day. It's just, it is a lot of manpower. And myself and my friend Matt and Dex and Betsy and a number of others who have been very, very, very giving of time, I think are just other things in life have gotten in the way. And I will say for myself personally, the UFDA Mud Run was a blast for a few years, and then it turned into a chore. And and it certainly wasn't my passion. And so I made the decision, and I was, you know, with everyone else to just kind of remove that from our race list this year at least, and perhaps next year as well, unless we find some more folks that are interested in taking it on. And that's why I say if there are people that have that passion and want to be part of the team, then yeah, reach out and find me and let's talk.
You have on your website, that's endracing.com, the Undead Hall of Fame. Tell us what those people are.
Sure. It's not easy. So another race or two races that we put on are in October out at the Turtle River State Park. And on Saturday we do a race called Entombed. And so it's the Extreme North Dakota 12-hour mountain bike of enduring delirium. And what that is it's about a 10-mile loop race that we put on for 12 hours. And every racer does it as many times as they can in those 12 hours. And you know, some people come out and do it one or two or three laps. Other folks will come out and do 16 laps. And so you have all different kinds of athletes, and you can do that individually or as a team. But what makes it crazy is then the very next day is End Trails, which is the Extreme North Dakota Terrifying Run Amongst Innumerable Lost Souls. And what that is, we like to make these names up, right?
This is the Halloween double feature, is that what
Absolutely,
it is?
Okay. Double feature. So what that is it's about a six-mile loop run. So on Saturday is a bike race, and then on Sunday is a run. And you do as many laps as you can. And again, same thing, you get all kinds of different types of people that want to do one or two laps, and some will come out and do 10 or 12 laps, or you do it as a team and do it as many as the team can do. But the Undead Hall of Fame, should you complete 100 miles on bike on Saturday and then come back on Sunday and run 50 miles, then you're in the Undead Hall of Fame.
Wow.
And
okay.
that is a true accomplishment.
Joel Larson is with Extreme North Dakota. It's a pleasure to talk with you, Joel. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you, Doug.
Again, more information at endracing.com. More Main Street in a moment.
Hi, I'm Cassie Shipley, Donor Relations Coordinator for Prairie Public. If you're a sustaining member, we can't thank you enough. Your generous monthly contribution provides a reliable source of funding so we can bring you high-quality programming and fact-based, independent journalism. Plus, you help bring down the costs of mailing out pledge reminders. And of course, it's greener for the environment. So we know you enjoy the little extra benefit of saving Prairie Public money. But here's where we could use your help again. Expired and renewed credit cards can stop a sustaining membership in its tracks. But that can't happen when you set up your monthly deduction via a checking account. So make the switch. All we need is your bank's routing number and your account number. That's it. So make your monthly gift to Prairie Public count even more by switching your sustaining membership to a checking account monthly deduction. It's easy to do. Just call me, Cassie Shipley, at 800-359-6900, extension 538, or email at sustainer@prairiepublic.org.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton. The Senate and House have passed their versions of the Farm Bill. It's now up to a conference committee to reconcile the differences. The sweeping legislation funds safety nets for farmers and major food assistance programs. It also has major implications for farmers facing tariffs and drought. And as Harvest Public Media's Esther Honig reports, it might legalize a long-forbidden crop.
The crop is hemp. It's grown for research in farms across the country, but it's not fully legal. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell championed the pilot program in the last farm bill and thinks it's time to remove hemp from the list of controlled substances. He spoke about it earlier this month.
I think it's time we took this step. I think everybody's now figured it out. This is not the other plant.
The other plant is marijuana, hemp's cousin that contains high levels of THC. But hemp does not and has lots of industrial applications, from textiles to construction materials and livestock feed. Ryan Laughlin farms 300 acres in southern Colorado. He thinks making hemp legal is long overdue.
Really, because I believe, honestly, that it is the only thing that's going to kind of bring agriculture out of the rut that it's been in for the last 30 years.
More recently, prices have plunged for corn and soybeans that are in the crosshairs of an impending trade war. In his white Ford pickup, Laughlin drives to his field where he's growing nearly 300 acres of hemp. Out here, the land is dry and covered in yellow prairie grass, but hemp grows just fine. Hemp itself is worth very little, but Laughlin says hemp flowers are very valuable and can sell for as much as $100 a pound.
That price, there's no comparison in anything in the world compared to that price, really.
Yeah, there's like nothing else you could grow.
Nothing else. Heroin? I mean, opium, maybe?
This crop will be used to make CBD oil, which some people use medicinally. Once hemp is widely grown, its price will likely drop. And not everyone thinks hemp is a miracle crop. Trey Riddle is with Sunstrand, a company in Kentucky producing fiber from hemp. He says hemp won't readily compete with cheaper materials like cotton and polyester already on the market.
There is really nothing that hemp's doing that isn't already being done by something else, with maybe the exception of CBD.
Of course, before the crop's full potential can be discovered, the Farm Bill has to be signed into law. The House passed its bill without a single vote from Democrats. House Republicans want stricter work requirements for food stamp recipients and cuts to major conservation programs. Now they have to come together with the Senate to hash out a compromise. Ferd Hefner is with the National Sustainable Agriculture Coalition and has watched the passage of the last 9 farm bills. He thinks the Senate version will hold sway.
There'll be a willingness to come to political reality and realize the bill needs to closely follow the Senate outline.
Ultimately, the farm bill will need Democrats on board. While other measures may be scrapped, legalizing hemp appears to have widespread support. And after 77 years of heavy federal restrictions, hemp could soon be like any other commodity, allowing hemp farmers to benefit from the same federal programs as others who grow corn and soybeans. Esther Honig, Harvest Public Media.
Harvest Public Media is a reporting collaboration that covers America's farm and food issues. Coming up on Main Street, a couple of music festivals, Bluegrass Goes Pink and the Prairie Pothole Music Festival. First, though, the news with Danielle.
For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster. North Dakota's budget director says state revenue collections for the first fiscal year of the biennium are tracking very close to the forecast.
About 3% over in total general fund collections, about 1% over on the sales tax. And, of course, the sales tax is the largest single revenue source for the general fund, so that's the one that we watch most closely. So to be a percent away from the forecast on that major tax type, it feels pretty good.
Joe Morissette says this is a good starting point for the upcoming August revenue forecast. He says the sales tax increases are coming from the oil patch and not the retail sector.
Something that we're certainly going to be watching and looking at as we work on our updated forecast.
Morissette says the 4 biggest retail cities, Fargo, Bismarck, Grand Forks, and Minot, reported a drop in sales tax collections compared to forecast. Life-changing. That's how Sandy Smith with the North Dakota Autism Center describes a new bulletin issued by the state insurance department that requires all health plans in the state to cover autism therapy treatment, including applied behavior analysis therapy.
Having access to this therapy for our families is life-changing. Children receiving this therapy will it'll reduce the amount of care that they need as they grow into adulthood. It reduces the amount of services they need in the community and also in the school district they attend. A lot of these children will go on to be happy, healthy individuals, contributing to society, have jobs, have families, have kids. You know, others may not, but there is a huge potential for many of these children to go on and lead very productive lives. And this ABA therapy is something that can make that happen.
Only two states, Wyoming and Tennessee, have not required insurance carriers to cover autism treatment. And North Dakota's Legislative Management Committee has hired John Bjornson as the new director of the Legislative Council. You may be wondering, what's that?
Not a lot of people know who we are and what we are, what we do.
Bjornson says the Legislative Council is the only staff legislators have. The council writes legislation, manages fiscal affairs, and provides legal advice to legislators. It is nonpartisan, and Bjornson told the committee he will do what he can to make sure the council stays that way. Bjornson will replace Jim Smith, who is retiring at the end of the summer. The council has a staff of 34. For Prairie Public, I'm Danielle Webster.
You're listening to Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, joined now by Jill Weiss. She joins us from our studio in Bismarck. And Jill, you're a familiar personality on Main Street.
Oh, I like that. That's fun.
Because you play bluegrass, and we like bluegrass. And you're going to talk about this annual event, this charity fundraiser for the Bismarck Cancer Center Foundation. Bluegrass Goes Pink.
Bluegrass is going to go pink this Saturday, July 14th, and it's at the Cross Ranch State Park. That's the place we hold our annual Bluegrass Festival in June. It's a great place for a concert, outside setting. And we started this back 7 years ago in memory of my sister Barb, who died of breast cancer when she was 50. And we thought we should just throw something together kind of quick, and we're here 7 years later. So we are excited to keep putting this event on.
And when you're not playing bass for the Cottonwood Band, your bluegrass band, you're a nurse, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a nurse. I'm just starting my 34th year at Sanford. I started at Bismarck Hospital, and we turned to Med Center 1, and now we're Sanford. And then I also work part-time at the Bismarck Cancer Center. So it just works really well. I work there as a nurse, and I see all the amazing things the foundation does for our patients.
And the Cancer Center, as I understand it, is a collaboration with both Sanford Medical Center and St. Alexia's Health?
It sure is. Yep. It's right in between the two hospitals. So it works kind of nice for the patients doing chemotherapy either at Mid-Dakota Clinic or at Sanford. And they a lot of times do chemotherapy right along when they're doing their radiation, too. So works out really awesome.
How does the foundation use the proceeds? Do you know?
You know, the foundation has a lot of different ways. We have some apartments, several apartments, and even one house. So if you're staying during your radiation, if you're from Watford City or, you know, another part of the state, let's say, you just stay there and you can rent it for very, very reasonable. You know, the monies are donated through the foundation. We have a massage therapist, Courtney, on staff. So twice a week while you're doing your radiation, you get a 15-minute massage. We have Amanda Immels is our dietitian on staff, and part of her monies are raised through the foundation for her budget. She works with all the cancer patients on diet and what they need to be eating and shouldn't be eating. And then Deb Colton is our social worker, breast cancer survivor / emotional counselor, if you will. And a lot of these folks have a tough road, and she works with them and the families as a social worker, counselor person, too.
Some very good reasons to head out to the Cross Ranch State Park near Washburn this Saturday. And as a matter of fact, you can go out in the morning if you want to take part in a 5K walk-run trail race, right?
Oh, sure. We added this event about 5 years ago and just got another whole facet of people to come out in the morning, and some dress up. And it's a very simple, fun run. We don't time anybody, and, you know, we aren't very serious about that. But we fill up those trails, and people love to run on the trails, along the river. And it's stroller friendly if you want to push a baby in a stroller, and young kids are riding their bikes on it. And we also opened up the cow pasture adjacent to the park and made it a 10K. Because there's people who want to run a little further. So anyway, they might get a little, you know, a little cow patty on their tennis shoe, but it's memorable. And then we have a little snack for them, and they get a shirt, and people really enjoy that walk run. And a lot of them do come back in the evening for the supper and the concert too.
And the cost for that walk run is $20?
It is, and you get a t-shirt, and for an extra $5, you get into the concert then too.
Because normal concert tickets are $10 for adults, ages 16 and under are free.
Correct, yep.
And the Cross Ranch State Park, if you haven't been to Washburn, North Dakota, that is beautiful.
It's one of the prettiest places in the state, I feel. And, I mean, it's just beautiful the way they keep it mowed and the trails and walking around. And this year, every year we do this event in memory of certain friends and folks we've lost throughout the year. And this year, the people we are doing this in memory of are Brandon Anderson of Center, Kim Gutnecht of Washburn, Troy Sheldon of Kentucky, formerly North Dakota, Marcia Stiefel, Donna L., and Richard Lahr, all from Bismarck.
Well, I went to your Facebook page, and I saw a photograph of 3-year-old Paula Anderson. Everybody's getting into
this. Yes. So Paula's grandma, her grandma, Nikki Daub, had brain cancer and died a couple of years ago. And Paula came with her grandma to radiation. And she did a fundraiser this past winter for the foundation as a 3-year-old.
Wow.
So we're going to honor her on Saturday night, and her mom's going to bring her up to the stage, and I think her grandpa Sid Hart's going to come up and from Bismarck, and we're just going to honor her and shower her with some gifts and just to let her know how special she really is. She's 4 now, and I can't imagine what she's going to do in her life starting out now, you know.
Well, I think everybody should wear pink, right? Because
you
want to show Paula Anderson your support for cancer and the foundation at Bismarck Cancer Center. That's part of the deal. Bluegrass goes pink.
It sure does. You know, the whole foundation helps people of all cancers. It's just in the background, we brought this on in memory of Barb, and that's what she died of, my sister. And she'd be just having so much fun at this event. She would absolutely love it.
Let's talk a bit about the music now. Your bluegrass band, Cottonwood, is of course, the regular, the featured attraction at Bluegrass Goes Pink. Tell us a bit about your musical group.
You know, we're going to have an anniversary in September of 17 years. And we just finished our fourth CD as a band, and it's called County Road 18. And I need to get you guys a copy of that. It's about the gravel road we live on north of Washburn. And I think we've got 4 or 5 songs on that new CD that we have written ourselves, which is really fun. A lot heavy on some gospel music on the CD. And it's just been a lot of fun to make the CD. We record right in Dan Foster's laundry room in Washburn, North Dakota, to kind of keep the costs down, you know. It's a labor of love. For the musicians listening who've ever made a CD, they know what I'm talking about. And so fun to have it done and be able to sell it at this event as well, too.
So you've got a washing machine and a dryer as a rhythm section.
Yeah, okay. We do. Yeah. Dan will open his window sometimes when the train is going through Washburn. And there's a couple of songs where we've heard the train kind of howling at the end of the song, and he just leaves it on there. It sounds perfect.
Well, let's get a little sample from First Harvest, another CD that you've put out, and this is a cut called Think of What You've Done.
Am I not the only one? After all this pain and sorrow, darling, think of what you've done. Heart, heart, dear, how I need you. Like the flowers need the dew. Loving you has been my lifeline. Can't believe it really through. Is it true that I've lost you? Am I not the only one?
Well, let's think of what you've done from First Harvest, a CD put out by Cottonwood, that bluegrass band. And I think
Jill, you don't just play bass, you sing, huh?
Oh, I do a little singing, and I've written one song now so far, County Road 18. Need to get on that a little more. I do play guitar, and we just have a lot of fun going around the state, playing music all over North Dakota, especially in the summer, and just really proud and honored to be fundraising. I think that's been since our beginning, we've kind of been that fundraising band. And anytime we can put our stamp on it and be involved with it, we like to be a part of that.
And, of course, this started 7 years ago, so how many people can you get out at that Cross Ranch
State Park? We've had around 350. I believe we had 400 one year. I know it'll be very hot on Saturday. We're going to have a few tents set up and a lot of bottled water and lemonade. And so we're going to be prepared for people out in the heat. But I think by evening time when the music starts at 7, it's going to be just fine. It's just beautiful under the trees there. But the one of the most important things is the supper at 5 o'clock. And a few years ago, we got all the Washburn churches on board. So the Lutherans are making the baked beans. The Baptists are making the coleslaw. The Methodists are doing watermelon and pink lemonade. And the Catholics are doing the hamburgers and brats and hot dogs. And then we have a young lady from Bismarck, Bailey Foskey, who makes all the cupcakes.
An ecumenical picnic.
It really is. And it's fun to have everybody from all the churches out there to support this event. They donate all the food that they bring. And that's really a big deal. And we have two sponsors this year that we are so grateful. Great River Energy, the power plant, you know, out of Washburn. And then the Aspen Group out of Bismarck Realty Company.
And people can get a sample of your band, Cottonwood, at the Urban Harvest in downtown Bismarck. That's tomorrow, right?
Yeah, Thursday night, Urban Harvest on 4th and Broadway. And that's a weekly event for about 7 or 8 weeks in Bismarck. Lots of fun. I think it actually starts earlier in the day, but since we're all working, we'll be there 6 o'clock on Thursday night, handing out pink flyers and inviting everybody to come out to the Cross Ranch.
Okay, so bring a lawn chair, bug spray, wear your pink. Saturday, July 14th at Cross Ranch State Park near Washburn, North Dakota, because bluegrass goes pink.
Thank you so much for having me.
Jill Weiss, always a pleasure. Coming up next, another toe-tapping opportunity, the Prairie Pothole Music Festival.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
On Prairie Public Primetime TV, Friday night, enjoy another triple header of talented regional musicians on Prairie Musicians. Starting with the Viking, Minnesota-based reggae-tinged blues rock band, Chrome. Then it's the authentic songwriting and rooted Midwestern folk of the Jeff Krause Trio. Twice the cost for whiskey, three times for the wine. Might drown in this city tonight. And rounding out the night, dynamic vocalist and songwriter Michael Shine. Enjoy an hour and a half of excellent music from your own backyard on Prairie Musicians. Friday night starting at 8 p.m. Central, 7 Mountain on the television service of Prairie Public.
This is Main Street on Prairie Public. I'm Doug Hamilton, joined by John Wardner. He's the organizer of the Prairie Pothole Music Festival, which takes place in Anamoose. It starts next Thursday through Saturday. That is the 19th through the 21st. And he joins us from our studio in Bismarck. Thanks for being with us, John.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. This is awesome.
You call this a grassroots festival. What do you mean by that?
It's real artist driven. I try to feature a lot of old local acts. We bring in many acts from out of state, of course, for different variety of stuff to see. But I definitely try to get a lot of local people involved and feature local things and have a local vibe for North Dakota. We don't have a lot of things like this around here, but we have a real love of music and an outlet for it. And so that's kind of what I'm trying to provide is some place for everybody to get together and just celebrate and love music and nature together.
Well, how did all this get started?
You know, I've kind of been doing this for a few years. My family has a lake cabin on a small lake called Brush Lake in North Dakota, and we got a big deck out front and stuff, and I've always loved music, and I've had friends that have been in bands and stuff, and I would have them come up and play on my family's deck, and we'd call it a big party, and it used to be called Pizzo Stock. That's kind of my nickname is Pizzo. And once I bought this chunk of land in the middle of nowhere to start a hunting lodge at me and my buddy, we looked at it and we thought, man, we could just really have an awesome festival out here. And so we changed the name to the Prairie Pothole Music Festival and started selling tickets in the full boat. And it's getting pretty serious now. So,
well, the festival site is about 6 miles north of Anamoos. Anamoos has a population, or had a population, of 227 in 2010. So how many people are you planning for?
About 300 to 500 we expect this year. Yep.
And they'll be camping, I take it.
Oh, yes. Yep. It's wide open camping. You can park right by your campsite. We have lots of nice trees to camp by and stuff. There's some beautiful tree rows, big, very mature cottonwood trees and such to camp around. It's a beautiful place. We've got a pond. A pothole is really a feature of the place. That's what we kind of named it after. We've got our own little lake, some people would call it, but, you know, some people call it a pothole. It gets fairly deep. It's nice to swim in. The water's nice, and there's no cow pastures around there. There's no, like, runoff and stuff that goes in it. It's a beautiful place.
So it's sort of a hunting pothole area, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I shot a coyote off the deck 2 winters ago. We shoot snow geese right off the deck sometimes while we're making lunch. I mean, it's the ducks are always coming and going. Sometimes you just sit and watch them. The pelicans have been real abundant lately. Man, the last time I was there, it was about 12 of them. And so it's fun.
Well, describe the festival site besides the, you know, the water and the trees and all that. You've got a couple of stages, right?
Yeah, I do. Yep, I've got two different stages. There's one it's basically like a huge deck with an awning on it and stuff. It's right on the lodge itself. It's a fairly large stage, and there's a lot of trees right there. It's a nice little grove, and it's right on the pothole. It's right where our main beach is. We've got a little pebble rock beach, and it's a beautiful place to just sit and watch music and enjoy nature all day long. And our other stage is kind of up in the hill. We've got a lot of nice hills and beautiful little valleys on the land and stuff, and we've got like a little natural amphitheater that we built the main stage around. And, yeah, it's it's a beautiful spot.
Now, the Prairie Potholes also have, besides the blazing sun occasionally on a summer day, you've got maybe a occasional biting insect or two. So what are you telling concert goers to prepare for?
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah, you definitely probably want to bring some bug spray. They're around and stuff. But there's no fire ban or nothing this year. Of course, it's been real wet and stuff. So we get to run all of our campfire sites and try and smoke the bugs out of there if we can. And do everything we can to keep them away from us. Right now, as the weather projects, it's going to get cool in the evenings, like down in the lower 60s. And normally when that happens, the bugs kind of retire for the night and stuff. So,
well, it sounds real pleasant, actually. The Prairie Pothole Music Festival is coming up Thursday, July 19th, runs through Saturday the 21st. John Wardner is the organizer. John, how do you select the musical acts?
You know, I kind of like younger, up-and-coming acts, people that are out there trying to get their music out there and working hard to benefit everybody and do a lot for their music scene, you know. It's a tough process, it is. I definitely want people, of course, that are going to draw a crowd and everything. That's kind of one of the main goals, too, is who is popular and what's going on right now. But, I try and get a couple of main bands right away, or a couple of headliners to lock down the date. You know, it's a big thing trying to pick a date right away in the summer. There's a lot of things going on and such, and once that happens, we can kind of build the festival around it. You know, once we get a couple of headliners locked down on a date, then we just start talking turkey with the other bands, and it goes from there. It started in January this year, so.
Well, one of those acts is Jennifer Lynn and the Groove Revival. We've got a little sample of them. It's a cut from their new album, Badlands, titled Burned It Down.
Yeah.
Open the front door without a sound. He was late when I got
John Jennifer Lynn's got some pipes.
Oh, man, yeah. We're real proud to have her this year. No, they're out there doing their thing and making their name known. It's awesome. They're a really great band, and they're highly talented.
So you got a variety of musical genres. I presume it is a festival after all.
Oh, yeah, it is a festival after all. Yep, we got some really great bluegrass. We got the Flea Bitten Tramps coming up this year. They're an awesome bluegrass band from right here in Bismarck and stuff. We've got Frog Leg from Minneapolis, Minnesota. They're an up-and-coming jam band and stuff, and they were just here at Rock Point on the 4th of July, and they put on quite the show. It was something else.
Is this a year-long effort for you? I mean, you mentioned you started planning this in January.
Yeah, I mean, when we locked the date down and stuff, I guess was in January. But really, yeah, before that, I had started, you know, I started thinking about headliners and really who I want for the next year. Pretty much after the festival ended last year, I was already talking about who we doing next year and what's going to happen. How can we grow and what do we need to do, you know? It's consuming. It really is. It's kind of taken over my life.
And people can eat out there. You got some food vendors on site.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We got J&L Food Vending coming up from Fargo. He's a real great guy. He serves all the basic stuff like hamburgers and hot dogs, and he also does nachos and Philly cheesesteaks, and he does breakfast sandwiches and all that great stuff.
And people are out in the great outdoors, and I think I heard a podcast where last year festival goers were treated with a Northern Lights display.
Oh, yeah, yep, yeah. Of course, that's one of the things about being out there in such a remote spot is getting to see the stars. We're above a lot of the major cities in North Dakota and stuff, and to the north where the Northern Lights are and stuff, we have a great view, and there's nothing, no actual light wash that they call it, you know. Blocking any of that view, and when the Northern Lights are out, it's the best I've ever seen. It was when I've been up there.
When does the music start? How late does it play?
So on Thursday, music starts at 5 in the afternoon, and it'll go till 1, and then on Friday and Saturday, we're going to have all three stages going, and the music will go until 2 o'clock in the morning. It starts at about noon. At 10 o'clock in the morning, actually, is when the first stage opens up. We have yoga classes going on every morning at 10 o'clock. There's a kayak race on Saturday afternoon, and we also have a campsite contest to see who can make the most luxurious campsite. There's people that show up with couches and chairs and smokers where they make brisket and ribs and fantastic meats and stuff to be eating out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, how can people get tickets to the Prairie Pothole Music Festival?
We have three pre-sale locations right now where you can buy physical tickets. We have Rhythm Records and Cafe here in Bismarck, also Many Visions. Apparel and clothing store over in Mandan is where you can buy more tickets, and also Nola's Lounge in Minot. And we also sell tickets online for pre-sale on our website through Eventbrite and Brown Paper Tickets.
All right, so online it's $50 plus fees. The day of the event it's $75, 18 and over only, correct?
Yep, 18 up.
John Wardner is the organizer of the Prairie Pothole Music Festival. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Dakota Datebook is next.
There's a lot changing for men right now.
I think we're confused about our place.
I just don't know what's appropriate to say.
There's no clear role, so this gets very, 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 very confusing.
Have you been thinking about what it means to be a man today? We want to hear from you. I'm Anna Sale from the Death, Sex, and Money podcast from WNYC Studios, and I'm hosting a national call-in with men and women about manhood today. Join us.
Listen and participate in Death, Sex, and Money's special live call-in show about manhood. Tonight at 8 Central, 7 Mountain on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for July 11th. Creating North Dakota and South Dakota was no easy matter, with years of partisanship and multiple proposals tossed around for dividing Dakota Territory into states. One school of thought saw dividing Dakota into North and South as vital. About 500 delegates from the various counties convened in July of 1888 in Huron to hash out division of the territory. By the end of the convention, most of the delegates supported division. Pro-divisionists penned a speech that condemned the territorial condition with increasing taxes, cramped industries, and ruined interests. It read in part, "Rights are invaded, justice is denied, public improvements are held back. Rightful political power is withheld, a voice in your own government is insolently refused. That sentiment referred to the inability of territory residents to choose state leaders. It was the president who selected the territorial governor, territorial secretary, and Supreme Court justices. Attorneys, ministers, newspaper editors, farmers, and businessmen also attended the convention, participating in auxiliary committees to consider division. After much discussion, the convention adjourned after adopting a plan for a constitutional convention for North Dakota and to take steps to also establish a state government for South Dakota. On this date in 1888, before a crowd at Huron's Opera House, a group of women presented two white silk swallowtail banners to the convention representing North Dakota and South Dakota. North Dakota's banner depicted an oil painting of a young, dark-haired woman holding a bundle of wheat. South Dakota's was a fair-haired woman holding a corn stalk. Fargo businessman Waldo Potter accepted the North Dakota banner from Flora Gans, a clerk for an insurance company in Huron. Potter said the banner was a gem of workmanship. Former Dakota Territorial Secretary George H. Hand thanked the women for the banners and said, "We will bear them aloft until heaven's golden light shall kiss their folds amidst the plaudits of a free and enfranchised people." Today, the South Dakota State Historical Society displays the banners in Pierre. At its centennial, North Dakota wanted its banner back. Instead, the state received replicas of both banners. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Jack Dura. I'm Errol Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from the North Dakota Humanities Council.
Hey, do you have a guest idea, a comment, or a question? It's easy to contact us. You can email us at mainstreet@prairiepublic.org or on Facebook, we're Main Street at Prairie Public. Or you can call us toll-free, 888-755-6377. We want to hear from you.
The United Kingdom is embroiled in a debate over how it should formally exit the European Union.
What we are proposing is challenging for the EU. It requires them.
This is all while Prime Minister Theresa May is trying to keep her government united and keep her job. President Trump arrives in London on Thursday. So what can we expect from his meeting there? That's on the next Morning Edition.
That's tomorrow morning, right here on Prairie Public.
Thursday on Main Street, we'll hear some aviation history, World War I pilots and their planes. It'll be featured at the Prairie Village Museum in Rugby, and Glenn Blackaby, director of the Dakota Territory Air Museum in Minot, will offer a preview of the presentation he'll be giving. Sue Balcom of the Root Cellars Farm near Mandan will talk about growing garlic on our show tomorrow, and Ashley Thornburg and I will share our What's Happening calendar of events. We hope you can join us for Main Street on Thursday. In the meantime, enjoy the rest of your day.